very happy to welcome to our program Jake Johnson. He's a research associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research based in Washington, D.C., and lead author for his group's Haiti's Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog. Jake, appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
One of the problems with our news media, our corporate news media, is really a weakness in covering important international stories. I think that's something this audience, the regular listeners, will agree with. And in particular, the situation now in Haiti, just south of our country in the Caribbean, has really not gotten much attention at all. And yesterday, Sunday, the 24th of January, an election was canceled there. A second time around that a runoff election for president has been called off under great pressure from street protests and the like. Jake, as the pressure on the street builds in Haiti in protest of what many feel is a fraudulent set of elections that have occurred under current President Michel Martelly, there's a lot to catch up on in terms of the facts. And as we begin, I wondered if you would tell our audience or briefly summarize for our audience some of the major events that have led to the cancellation of yesterday's election in Haiti.
Yeah, sure thing. Well, I think to start, you know, these were cited for the protests cited for the reason why the election was canceled. But as you mentioned, sort of things do start well before then. You can sort of look back really starting many months ago with the beginning of this electoral process, when in the first round there was sort of massive fraud alleged by human rights groups and local observers after the election. And the case was the political party monitors were allowed access, distributed around 900,000 passes to these monitors, gave them access to voting centers in places where they weren't actually registered to vote. In the end, allowed them to vote multiple times in many cases. Now, in an election with only 1.6 million votes counted, 900,000 obviously can play a big role in the outcome there. And so really, as this built up towards the January 24th election, there was a growing call for this to be called off and for further investigation to happen, and really a dialogue to come around. The main opposition candidate, Jude Celestin, had actually decided to boycott the race altogether.
And Jake, I wonder if you'd summarize for us some of the opposition party declarations about the fraudulent nature of this election, as well as their demands at present to resurrect democratic elections there in Haiti.
Yeah, well, there really had been a growing chorus from all sorts of civil society groups. You had religious leaders, human rights groups, and local observers, as I mentioned. And really key among this group towards the end was also private sector groups that generally have been supportive of the president and really sort of had called for a pause to be taken and for this election to be delayed in order for a dialogue and a consensus to be reached in order to move forward. And also key amongst this is the role of the international community, of course. This is a $100 million electoral process, and the international community is funding the bulk of that, including the U.S. to the tune of over $30 million. And they were very, very much pressuring for this election to happen on schedule and on January 24th. And then at the last minute, as these negotiations broke down to try and reach some sort of a deal, sort of pulled the support for that election and started encouraging dialogue before having the election. And that's really sort of what did in this electoral process on Sunday, and not just sort of the protests, which became the sort of pretext in order to blame the protest for causing this delay, which really was months in the making.
Now, the second place finisher in the previous election, presidential election, Jude Celestin, he declined to participate because of the fraud. What are the declarations being made by Jude Celestin in terms of the reasons why he did not want to participate in this election, and what conditions has he set up, if any, to participate in a future date for a runoff election?
Yeah, well, so key amongst the sort of, actions that have been taken over the last couple months was an evaluation commission that was actually set up by the president himself. And this is the reason why the presidential election had first been delayed, was in order for this commission to perform its evaluation. And they did come back with a pretty scathing report of the irregularities. In fact, they found only 8% of the tally sheets they looked at were totally free from any sort of irregularities. And that, you know, in a number of cases, there were significant irregularities, and that a number of people had been voting, again, as I mentioned earlier, these political party monitors, able to vote off list, and that this made up a significant chunk of the voters. And they outlined a number of steps to be taken to move forward, amongst them replacing the Electoral Council that had sort of been discredited throughout this process for its handling of the situation. It also called for sort of taking a further look at certain aspects of what had happened, and, you know, sort of also, especially, as they pointed out, was retraining and rehiring all of the poll workers that were complicit in these irregularities or that were responsible for some of these actions that were carried out. You know, and what happened was directly after that report was issued, just a few days later, Marta Lee, by decree, invoked this election for the 24th, so without time to really implement or see how those changes could play out. And the implementation of those recommendations has sort of been the center point of what Celestin has been asking for, as well as many of the human rights groups and the business chambers as well have been asking for these recommendations to be implemented.
Jake, tell our audience a bit about the first runner-up in this, or the guy who came in, the candidate who came in first place in the initial elections, and that was Jovenel Moïse, an ally, a hand-picked successor of the outgoing president, Michel Martelly. Maybe you can speak to how improbable was it that this candidate would garner the most votes in this wide field of candidates, given that he was a virtually politically unknown, having only really been involved in the business sector in terms of his banana export business.
Yeah, so he was a virtual sort of political unknown. You know, he has benefited, obviously, from Martelly's support and the use, of state resources, as well as sort of just, you know, the state infrastructure to get that message out. Martelly has been appearing beside him at, you know, performances. And as a performer himself, you know, he does know how to draw a crowd, and that certainly can carry over some support. But I think you certainly would expect him to, you know, compete in an election, except that, you know, we are talking about a presidential field that was 54 candidates, right, and had, you know, significant sort of dispersion of support. And, you know, when you start getting down to the margins of it, right, nobody had sort of majority support. And when you look at the amount of irregularities, I think what it comes down to is that you really don't know, what that outcome looks like, given the number of irregularities, without at least sort of opening the books and taking a closer look. And I think that's what that's really centered around, is that, you know, given the number of irregularities, it's very difficult to know. And so before moving on with a process that has been, you know, called so, you know, illegitimate by these forces, you know, you really need to take that closer look and determine, make sure that you got the results right before moving on.
We're speaking with Jake Johnson, research associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research and lead author for his group's Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog. And we'll give the web addresses out for that as we conclude a little later. Jake, there have been demands for Martelly's removal from office, and I wondered if you would talk about the possible way forward should he leave the presidency or is succeeded by a provisional government when his term expires on February 7th.
Yeah, so that sort of remains the main sticking point in the negotiations currently for what happens next. And indeed, the election was, you know, there had been days of sort of negotiations about what this would look like. And then when it came down to it on Friday, things were really, this is again 48 hours before the election was set to begin. It was still all set, apparently. And finally, when the Electoral Council called for the cancellation of the election, there was no date set sort of as part of a political agreement. And so, you know, the situation now is sort of back to the drawing books. And as all sides sort of approach the table and find a way forward. And I think that the question now is who's at that table and who's trying to sort of make that decision. Marta Lee has sort of indicated that he would like to be there to hand over, you know, the presidential sash to his successor. And obviously sort of emboldened by the cancellation of the election, some of the protesting groups are also calling for Marta Lee's immediate removal before the end of his term, which is February 7th. I think the most likely situation would be some sort of deal where Marta Lee leaves office at the end of his term on February 7th and as a consensus government is formed. And I think the question now is sort of what the makeup of that government might look like.
Now, as protesters in the street demanded Martelly's immediate removal from office, there have been ominous threats from some who had backed Martelly and those who were involved in previous coups against governments, such as that of Jean Bertrand Aristide. One particular guy was quoted in the newspapers recently, Guy Philippe, who himself was among the coup plotters that ousted Jean Bertrand Aristide in 2004, and has been accused of being a death squad leader in Haiti. How much concern do you have that this whole process could unravel into a lot of violence or even a civil war?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there has been increasing tensions on all sides of the political divide as this happens. And I think, you know, part of that is sort of by taking this to the brink, right? These calls for further investigation and to get the process right in order to move forward have been around for months, right? And this really goes back even to legislative elections, which are held even earlier in the year in August. And these were dominated sort of by violence. About a quarter of the vote was never counted as voting centers got shut down. You mentioned Guy Philippe. He's actually running for senator right now, and his election is being rerun and is in the runoff, which is supposed to take place alongside presidential elections whenever they're set. There's many components to this crisis, right, which has been building for months. And when you look at sort of the levels of violence, I think, you know, it's a lot of, you know, protesters, there's some burning barricades and things like that, but things haven't, you know, risen to a real sort of crisis level in terms of public stability. But I think moving forward, each side is trying to sort of better their hand at the table in terms of what they can, what this next process looks like.
Jake, I wanted to get your view on why the Obama administration had supported going forward with elections until the 11th hour, elections where there would only really, in essence, be one candidate. And despite the widely held view from people on the ground there in Haiti and international human rights groups that the first round of balloting was rife with fraud. Why would the Obama administration want to go forward here?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And I think, you know, a lot of the political support behind Martelly for pushing this right till the edge and letting these tensions build over the previous months has been that support from the international community. I think when you look at it, there's a number of interests there. One is obviously as the funders of this election, they have, you know, a lot of interest in seeing it happen in an orderly manner. There also has been, you know, obviously billions of dollars invested in this country by the international community after the earthquake, and really dating back to the 2004 coup, after which the UN troops have been in Haiti. And so there's been a tremendous amount of money spent on trying to build up Haiti's institutions by the international community. And to see this process forward was supposed to be sort of a, you know, a culmination of this action. And this dates back also to the 2010 election where Martelly came to power, in which there was also, you know, many problems in the election, and it wasn't until actually Martelly's supporters took to the streets and the international community intervened that he was able to make it to the runoff and go to the elections. And in fact, the person who he displaced in that round then in 2010 was Jude Celestin, the man participating in the runoff this time. So I think you have to really go back and see these relationships develop and the roles of all the players to understand, you know, where the interest lies, certainly with the international community in the current process.
Former Haitian President Jean Bertrand Aristide, a man who's greatly admired and loved in Haiti, he returned to Haiti from exile a couple years back. And I'm wondering, what is Jean Bertrand Aristide saying about the current crisis, if anything?
So he personally hasn't been terribly involved in the political process, though his party, Fanmi Lavalas, did field a presidential candidate and a number of legislative candidates as well. They did not formally join the sort of opposition coalition known as the G8, which includes Jude Celestin and some other opposition parties, but instead contested the election through the electoral court. And that electoral court found a number of significant irregularities when they looked a little bit deeper. And that's really what, set off a number of these further calls for investigation. And they have as well been calling for significant changes to the system and really for this process to, you know, start from scratch, or at least to go back and rerun this presidential election from the beginning, given the number of irregularities. And we'll see, you know, that is certainly something, you know, as these things are playing out, you know, many groups have been calling for it. I think the process has really been tainted from the beginning.
As you said earlier, The private sector was one of the institutions in Haiti that has come out on the side of stability and not wanting the country to go into upheaval and running this, what many people find a deeply flawed electoral process. What about the Catholic Church? Has the Catholic Church in Haiti, an important institution, weighed in here on the way forward out of this real electoral chaos?
Certainly, yes. The Cardinal in Port-au-Prince actually was directly involved in a number of the negotiations that were happening with leaders of the private sector as well in the days leading up to the election, looking for a way out of the crisis. But I think, you know, when you look back at sort of the Catholic Church and this Cardinal specifically's role with the Martelly administration over the last number of years, is they've been involved in a number of sort of political negotiations and compromises, which have been presented as sort of paths forward that in the past have not really provided meaningful change. And, you know, those have been watching Haiti, some of the actions that led up to these elections over the last number of years, different accords that were reached and political agreements that were reached brokered by the Catholic Church that haven't really provided the meaningful change that prevented us from getting here in the first place. And so I think as these different players are at the table now deciding these next steps, you know, it's important that this dialogue really is opened up and people understand sort of where this is going and whose interests are being taken into consideration.
Jake, just a final couple of questions here while we got a few minutes. As the nation focuses on the primaries among Democrats and Republicans for their respective parties' nominations, there's of course a lot of focus on the Hillary Clinton-Bernie Sanders contest. But Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, was involved at some key moments in Haiti's history, in fact, the previous election. Could you speak to the role Hillary, we don't have a lot of time, but just say briefly a little bit about some concern you have about the role Hillary Clinton played in the last election there in Haiti.
Yes, certainly. And you mentioned the reason why the international community might be supporting this process, despite its flaws, to see its conclusion as quick as possible. And I think that might be one of those reasons. As I mentioned, the involvement in the national community in 2010, it was really Hillary Clinton and the State Department's direct involvement, including Hillary Clinton herself, sort of leaving as the middle of the crisis in Egypt was taking place to go to Haiti to intervene and to encourage them to accept that Jude Celestin's removal from the runoff and Martelly's ascension into that position would happen. And so that direct involvement and sort of that invested nature and that support from Martelly from the beginning, you know, has really characterized a lot of the relations between the international community, the opposition, and the government over the last 5 years. And so I think, you know, seeing this process through to the end is key in order to protect that legacy and to protect the State Department's involvement and support for this government, you know, through the last 5 years of reconstruction and after the earthquake.
Well, just a last question here, also relating to the Clintons, and that is, as the chief writer for the Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog, you know well the details of some of the gross mismanagement of the funds that came in internationally for earthquake reconstruction in Haiti. The Clinton Foundation has played an important role in funneling funds to Haitian reconstruction. Jake, maybe just, you know, briefly, because, again, we don't have a lot of time, but summarize for us a bit of the role, positive or negative, that you think the Clinton Foundation has played in earthquake relief.
You know, the Clinton Foundation has played a role. It is also both Clintons directly. In fact, the Reconstruction Commission that was set up after the earthquake in Haiti back in 2010 was chaired by Bill Clinton. Obviously, Hillary Clinton was at the State Department at the time. The two of them really did control a lot of that post-earthquake scenario. And I think as we look back, you know, there have been some successes, obviously, in the immediate aftermath of the earthquake. When we start looking at sort of that long-term development of Haiti and a lot of the long-standing challenges really haven't been met over the last 5 years. When you look at the housing crisis that's still in Haiti right now, many thousands still displaced, hundreds of thousands who've been displaced once again after the earthquake and then all over again now, living in the outskirts of Port-au-Prince, an area with no government services at all. And so there's really a number of, you know, problems with this reconstruction effort overall. I mean, I think it's the Clinton Foundation is certainly a part, but it's, you know, $10 billion from all over the world that went into Haiti after the earthquake, pledged from donor countries. And so, you know, there's really a lot of investment in this country from the international community, and sort of seeing and presenting it as a success is certainly a big part of that.
Well, Jake, to be continued, I'd love to have you back to talk more about Haiti and where it's headed. Unfortunately, as I think we all realize, it's a topic and an important situation not well covered in the U.S. media. But appreciate you being here, Jake, and leave our listeners with the websites for both the Center for Economic and Policy Research as well as your Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watch blog.
Yeah, you can go to the website. It's cepr.net, and you can actually just find the blog. It's right on there. There's a big Haiti logo, so you shouldn't miss it.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for all your important work to get some of this information out to the public about Haiti. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jake. Bye-bye. That's Jake Johnson, Research Associate with the Center for Economic and Policy Research and the Haiti Relief and Reconstruction Watchblog.